The Gopher Legislative Advisory Board was created by Executive Order 2020-06. That order is publicly available on the Governor's website. Today's meeting is an official meeting of the Board, is open to the public, and will be run in a manner compliant with RSA 91-A. We have someone on the phone taking minutes, which will be posted to the Gopher webpage. Today's meeting is also being recorded. Should you be a speaking participant and not wish to be recorded, you may disconnect now or at any time. My name is Jerry Little. I am Director of the Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery, and I will facilitate today's meeting. Because the Board is meeting by phone, under RSA 91A, there are a few logistics that we need to establish. First, each of us must state our names, where we are located, and who is in the room with us. We will do that via a roll call like this. I am Jerry Little, Director of the Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery, in the Gopher office at One Eagle Square in Concord, New Hampshire. And in the room with me are Rhonda Hensley, Steve Giovanelli, Nancy Smith. Senate President Donna Soucy, are you with us?
Yes, Commissioner. This is Donna Soucy. I am at my home in Manchester, New Hampshire, and I am alone.
Thank you. House Speaker Steve Sherliff.
Yes, Commissioner. I'm in the Speaker's office at the State House, and I am alone.
Senate Republican Leader Chuck Morse.
Yes, Jerry. I'm in my office. Atkinson, and I am alone.
House Republican Leader Dick Hinch.
This is Dick Hinch. I am in my office in Merrimack, New Hampshire, and I am alone.
Chairman Lou D'Alessandro. Senator D'Alessandro.
I'm at my home, and this is Lou D'Alessandro. I'm at my home in Manchester, and I am all alone.
Thank you, Senator. Chairwoman Mary Jane Wallner.
Mary Jane Wallner, at my home in Concord, New Hampshire, and I am alone.
Senator John Reagan.
John Reagan, I'm in my office alone.
And Representative Aaron Hennessy.
Aaron Hennessy. I'm in my home in Littleton with my two minor children.
Thank you all. As we move through our agenda today, each board member and anyone else speaking is asked to identify themselves before speaking. Should you choose to take any votes today, they must be done by roll call following the process we just used. And finally, before we begin today's presentations, please remember to use 5-star if you would like to ask a question. So it's been a couple of weeks, I guess, since we've had a Legislative Advisory Board meeting. At your last meeting, you chose to meet again on today's date. And what we have put together for an agenda are brief, and by brief I mean a minute or two, presentations on the 11 programs that have been stood up so far by the Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery. I'm going to take them a little bit out of order from the agenda that was posted only for to facilitate some issues that are going on here at the Gopher office. There's another meeting going on downstairs that has some of our folks tied up. And so we're going to take in order presentations on the first responder stipend program, the frontline protective worker stipend program, the long-term care stabilization program, and then the New Hampshire agricultural grants, all because those presentations will be made by our financial officer, Steve Giovanelli. We will then go to New Hampshire nonprofit grants, New Hampshire child care relief program, the New Hampshire food bank, and then the healthcare system relief fund, because those presentations will all be made by Nancy Smith, who is here with us, and then we will move on, and I guess some of those will also be done by Lisa English, who hopefully will be able to join us, and then we'll move on to the higher education assistance grants, municipal and county payments, and the Main Street Relief Program. So we're going to go start with the stipend programs. We've grouped them all together. So I'm going to hand this off to Steve Giovanelli, who is Gopher's financial officer, and ask him to start with an update on the first responder stipend program.
Okay. This is Steve Giovanelli with the Gopher office. The first responder stipend program was operationalized last week, at the tail end of the week. The Department of Safety received a multitude of requests from various different agencies throughout the state, totaling $14.5 million. Those requests have been reviewed. They've been looked at, and they are in process within New Hampshire First to be paid out, and those payments should be going out within the next day or two. There's also a state portion of this stipend also being directed through the Department of Safety. We've received approximately $2 million worth of requests for reimbursement for those stipends to the various state agencies. We're still waiting for a couple there to be complete. We had budgeted about $4 million for state employees and $20 million for non-state first responders. So that's going very well. My impression from safety is there aren't a lot of non-state organizations left to apply for funds. So it's looking like the budget of $20 million for the non-state workers should be pretty good for meeting the needs that we've set out there. The Long-Term Care Stabilization Fund, the stipend being put out, that is being put out through New Hampshire Employment Security. The Gopher office is in a position of reimbursing Employment Security for payments made to the various employers with eligible recipients. So far, the Gopher office has reimbursed Employment Security $13.6 million. As of the close of business yesterday, Employment Security has paid out $16.9 million in stipends. So there is a balance from the original $45 million provided for funding of about $28 million left, with about 5 weeks to go. It's looking like the program is sufficiently funded to meet the end date of June 30th there. We have seen a ramp up in the weekly costs slightly with the expansion of eligible recipients for the stipend. If that ramp up continues, it might fall a little bit short, but it's hard to say at this point in time, but it looks pretty safe. The last stipend is for the frontline protective worker stipend. That's for various different workers at the Department of Health and Human Services. I spoke with them this morning to begin to set up the process for how the Department of Health and Human Services will inform the Gopher office of who's eligible for the stipend and receive reimbursement from the relief funds for those payments. So putting that together is going on right now. They have already, they've been making those payments to their employees, so we'll be in a reimbursement position there. Does anybody have any questions?
Are there any questions about any of the stipend programs? These are the programs that are providing either $300 or $150 additional per week, depending upon whether somebody is part-time or full-time.
Yes.
Representative Walner, do you have a question?
I do. So I've asked this a couple of times in the past, and I guess I still need to have a better understanding of it, but I was wondering why the workers at the New Hampshire hospital, the state mental health hospital, are not receiving any of the frontline worker benefits from this stipend program. It seems like most of our other institutions that the state runs, corrections, the Sununu Youth Center, Glen Cliff, a number of other institutions are receiving it, and I wondered what the reason was for not having it available
hospital workers?
I don't have an answer for you on that. These are not designs or limitations that were created by the Gopher staff. These are generally requests from the senior managers at the agencies involved. Lisa, do you have something to add to that? I'm sorry. So Lisa English has joined us from the Gopher staff. She was not in the room when we did the roll call. Lisa English.
And my apologies. Thank you, Director. My apologies for being late to the meeting. I think also certainly there have been some very specific requests and recommendations from this board. For example, the CPSWs was a request made by this particular board. So I don't know that there's necessarily a closed door there, but I think it is certainly related to the recommendations that we receive.
So, Commissioner Little, hearing Lisa say that, I'd like to know if at some point the Gopher Advisory Board could have some discussion about the workers at the New Hampshire Hospital, the mental health facility here in Concord.
Certainly. You may hold conversations about any topic you wish. If you'd like, we can add it to the other category at the end of today's agenda.
That would be fine with me if other members of the committee feel the same way.
Got it. So I'm writing that in at the bottom of my agenda. Pardon me. Any other questions about any of the stipend programs? Seeing none, Steve, were you also going to talk to us about the agricultural grants program?
Yes. We have started working with the Department of Agriculture on the agricultural grants. There are a couple. We started working specifically on the category for dairy and for the growers. For the dairy farm relief, shortly after we began working on that, some additional federal monies became available for dairy farmers. So it kind of, I don't want to say it upset the apple cart, but it had Commissioner Jasper had some plans, and it kind of changed his plans a little bit. So he had to step back and re-examine what the need is in the dairy farmer community. He doesn't want to make them more than whole, so he went back to the drawing board on that. For the growers, we've been working on an application/survey that is going to similar to what was done with the Main Street Relief Program, but on a much smaller scale, to gather information and determine where the needs are and how to administer the aid to the growers. That particular process did take for lack of a better way to say it, it took a back seat this week as we accelerated getting the Main Street Relief Program up and running. So we will be getting back in touch with the Department of Agriculture towards the end of the week to resume working on that, and hopefully over the next week or two we'll have the surveys out there.
Any questions about the agricultural grants? Seeing none, I just want to step back into the previous topic about stipends. I think Nancy Smith, our general counsel, may have a couple of comments to make. Nancy?
I believe that the most recent Treasury FAQs, which came out last week on May 28th, were sent to you with your agenda. On page 7, there is one additional FAQ that may provide some additional insight on the subject of hazard pay. It's at the bottom of page 7. And the question was, may payments from the fund be used to cover across the board hazard pay for employees working during a state of emergency? And the Treasury answer was no. The guidance says that funding that may be used to meet payroll expenses for public safety, public health care, human service, and similar employees whose services are substantially dedicated to mitigating and responding to COVID-19. So there are some limits on who can be given housing.
Thank you, Nancy. Any new questions as a result of that comment? All right, seeing none, then we'll move along. Steve, you're welcome to stay with us, but thank you very much for that update on the stipend program.
Okay, I will exit that.
Thank you, sir. Next, I'd like to move to the nonprofit grants section, and Lisa English is going to be briefing us on that. There's been quite a bit of activity relative to that program that we're doing in conjunction with the Charitable Foundation, the Center for Nonprofits, and the CDFA.
Thank you, Director Little. So there's not, I wouldn't say there's a ton of new information put out there, but I know we're all very excited about this program. Certainly the work being done by the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, as well as the New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits and the Community Development Finance Authority. They're working very hard on finalizing the program overview and development, and we certainly anticipate having more information soon to talk about that program and how nonprofits will be able to apply and what the criteria will be. But I can, I'm certainly thrilled to be working with those organizations as they have brought exactly what people have hoped for, which is their expertise and their understanding of how things are working and how nonprofits have been impacted in the state of New Hampshire.
Any questions for Lisa about the new, nonprofit grant program? Representative Waller.
Thank you. I wondered how far along they are on the application process, and when do you think that grants actually will be going out to the nonprofit sector?
So I think that they are getting, like I said, very close as far as being able to announce the final criteria and program. And I think that they will then be in line with the process that had been looked at initially, which has some time for the application process, a couple of weeks there, and I think some time to make sure that there's an application review followed by funding decisions. So I don't have an exact date at this point in time, but I think we will have some dates soon as we roll out that program. And certainly the time, obviously making sure that we get everything right is as important as making sure we get funds out there as quickly as is reasonably possible, because we understand that the pain is very real out there in both the nonprofit and business world.
Not holding you to it, Lisa, is it a good guesstimation that we're looking at mid to late July before funds start hitting the street?
I think that's a good assumption, yes.
Thank you. Further questions?
Yes, I do have a further question.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Do we know, do we have an idea, do they have a pre-application process? Do we have any idea how many applicants there are?
The only pre-application process that I'm aware of at this point in time is with the Main Street program and child care.
Okay.
But not in the nonprofit sector.
Okay, so not in the nonprofit sector, just the other two. Okay, thank you.
Correct. Further questions about the nonprofit grant program? Senator D'Alessandro. You may have take yourself off mute, Senator D'Alessandro, maybe.
Okay, I'm off mute.
Yes, you are.
Am I off? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. With regard to the non-for-profits, July might be late in the game for many of these not-for-profits who are suffering as we speak. Is this part of the money that could go on until the 30th of December before it all has to be spent?
That's correct.
Okay. So indeed, you could do a look back in terms of the grant application. If indeed it comes mid-July or the end of July, it could be retroactive to the beginning of the application period. Is that a correct assumption, or am I on the wrong track there?
That is correct. CARES Act Flex Funds can cover COVID-19-related expenses and issues from March 1st through December 30th, so there can be a look back.
Okay. I think that many of these are in dire straits as we speak. And will they be notified that there is a look back provision?
Again, without having the final program documents, I do think that these organizations understand the challenges here, and given that the CARES flexible funds can be used back to March, I would anticipate that this is something that would both include costs and expenses from prior to the program announcement and application period, as well as looking forward at some of the additional costs that nonprofits face as they move through the rest of the calendar year.
Great. Thank you very much.
Any further questions about the nonprofit grant program? Seeing none, then we will move on to the New Hampshire Child Care Relief Program. Again, Lisa.
Thank you. So this is the New Hampshire Child Care Recovery and Stabilization Program, which is a child care program working with the New Hampshire, the DHHS, as well as the Department of Education, that is building upon some of the earlier work those two departments have done between themselves as well as with other stakeholders and providers in the emergency child care program. And so there are some important dates that are out there right now, which is there is currently a pre-qualification process. And if you go to the GOPR website, you'll be able to take a look at that. And that date is being extended to, I believe, the end of this week. Some data for your consideration. As of right now, there are 526 child care providers that have been designated through that pre-qualification process. There are 362 child care providers that are open and caring for children. There are 154 that are listed as planning to open within the next 30 days, and an additional, I believe, 10 opening by September 8th. There are 9,693 children being served in open programs, and there are 11,584 total full-time child care slots or full-time equivalent child care slots available in open programs. And I believe I have 1,891 open full-time child care slots. So I'm not sure. I'll have to get the discrepancy between those two numbers. But that program is certainly described on our website. And again, there is this pre-qualification period that goes through the end of this week, which will then be followed by a formal application period.
Speaker Sherlock, you have a question, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, I received an email a day or so ago from an owner of a youth summer camp, and with your indulgence, I'll read it. It's very brief. It says, I'm hoping that some help and guidance from you as a member of Gopher. I am the owner of a youth summer camp. Youth summer camps were advised not to apply for funding through Main Street program because they would be covered under the funding specific child care. Camps have now been notified that to be eligible for child care funds, they must be open by the end of the summer. If not, they cannot qualify. Camps across the state of New Hampshire have made the difficult decision to close for the summer due to COVID-19. Now they are ineligible for any relief funding from the state of New Hampshire. This is devastating to the entire youth camping industry. How can this be rectified? Thank you. And so I guess my question, Commissioner, is this a problem, and what can we do to rectify the situation that our youth summer camps are now in?
We agree that it's a problem. I also received that letter. We've discussed it here in the office. I also saw the woman who wrote the letter. I believe she was on the evening news last night on Channel 9. And so I'm aware of what the problem is. I don't have a good answer for it at this point in time. I understand that timing has been unfortunate for her that, and for many of the other summer camps, so not to personalize this because I think she speaks for a number of people, but that they had to make a call a while ago whether or not they would have a season. I believe they're now being allowed to start to flex open. But for a number of reasons, whether it is they can't get enough people, they can't manage the 10-to-1 sort of ratio for safe operation, that most of their work is done with pre-registration, which there's no time for at this point in time, and that there was confusion of what program they might be eligible for. It's a problem, without a doubt. It's something that we need to put some thought into and figure out, because they do provide a very vital service for the children and families of New Hampshire. So I'm sorry, I don't have a good answer, but the letter came in yesterday, and I'm very aware that the issue is there. We're talking about it.
Yeah. Commissioner, I wonder, I support Representative Waldner's request to have somebody come in to speak about the New Hampshire Hospital, and they're getting additional benefits for what they're doing. And I wonder if it'd be possible to have somebody from New Hampshire Camps or some other trade organization. I understand they had someone speak to reopen New Hampshire, but I thought if we could have somebody come in from the New Hampshire Camps to explain the situation and possibly come up with some kind of solution for them to be able to open before the end of summer, to provide relief to those employees that want to get back to work but have child care issues.
Very good.
Thank
Representative
you, Commissioner.
Waldner, you have a question. Representative Waldner, question?
Yes, I would just like to chime in here on Speaker Shurtleff's suggestion of having someone come in. I really think this could lead to a really serious problem for this summer. We already know that many children have been out of school and parents have been home with them, but a lot of parents do need to get back to work. And these summer day camps provided really valuable child care experience for children and for their families, so that they could work and the children could enjoy a camp experience in a day camp. And I'm really concerned if they are not opening and we have not been able to find a way to help them open safely, but get back to some ability to be there for the kids and the families that need it as they go back to work. I think this could be a really serious problem for New Hampshire this summer. So I hope that we will have them come in, and I hope that we will work on this and see if we can't come up with some ideas about how they might be able to get open.
Thank you, Representative. Lisa, do you have a comment?
Yes, just I want to just take this opportunity because I think there are some real challenges that are happening, and to recognize that this is some of the benefits of the work that have happened between different departments. So you have, as well as with different stakeholders, you have the work, for example, on child care being conducted in tandem with the cliff effect work and whole family work being done by the state, as well as including a focus on child welfare. And the fact is that we were, so there's a lot to learn from this area, certainly from my perspective, and there are financial challenges, but there's also challenges with the fact that parents are looking for different ways. They don't, some parents don't want to send their children back into the same kind of circumstances. So we're, I know that, for example, the Council for Thriving Children will look at this, DHHS and DOE will look at data and try and find the best way to navigate how to address childcare as we go through this, you know, post-public health emergency.
Thank you, Lisa. Senator D'Alessandro, you have a question or comment, sir?
Yes, thank you very much, Commissioner Little. And Lisa, a couple of things. I think all of us received that email from the camp, director, so I think that's something that's that everybody's aware of in the severity of that situation. We've had kids that have been cooped up, though, since really, let's say, the end of the month of March. So you had April, May, going into June. These camps provide an outlet, and I'm thinking about the mental health of these kids, which I think is very, very significant. Secondly, the parents who need this opportunity to get themselves back to work, but also to have a place to for their children to go. And these camps have been very helpful and have been flourishing as part of the New Hampshire landscape for a long period of time. So it seems to me this is an issue that's very significant at this point in time. I'm from an area where we have a number of youngsters that use these day camps. They've been a significant part of their, you know, of their learning experience. So it seems to me the sooner we can address that situation, the better. It's going to have a long-lasting effect. We're coming out of a very, very difficult period as far as education is concerned. I think DOE should be very much involved in this. These kids have been cooped up for a long period of time, and that's, you know, K through 12. And they need an outlet. They need this experience. The families need this experience. And I think it's vital that we hear from people with regard to this and get clarification as to what's going to happen. As was stated, some of these people have closed down, and they would like to know if they have the ability to open up and take advantage of some of the dollars that are available. I think it's a very, very critical issue, to be honest with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any other comments about day camps? Seeing none. Oops, sorry. Representative Wallner. Representative Wallner, question?
This is not a question about the day camps, but it's a question about the child care relief program.
Sure.
I wondered when the application will be available for child care providers to apply. Actually, I know that they have done the pre-application, but when will they actually see the application that they need to fill out?
So I believe it will be after the pre-qualification closes, and I believe it will be, I don't want to say immediately after, although that may be. I know that the original point in time that the link would have been live was going to be the morning after the essentially midnight close of the pre-qualification. That pre-qualification has been extended, so my assumption is that by next week that grant application will be live, but I'm sorry I don't have the exact time. But certainly this information will be made available on our website as well as on Child Care Aware of New Hampshire.
And just as a follow-up to that question, I wondered this not only for the child care program but also for the Main Street Relief Program. I was wondering what sort of reporting guidelines will be attached to these grants? What kinds of things will providers who receive these grants in both, I guess in the nonprofit grants, the Main Street Relief and child care, what kind of requirements are the federal government asking of us for the grant recipient? What will they have to report on?
Representative, this is Nancy Smith. The requirements will vary a bit between programs because of the different nature of the recipients. It will depend on whether basically these are going to end users of the money, you know, beneficiaries, or whether they are going to businesses that are being asked to provide services to others with the grant money. There are different requirements under 2 CFR 200 distinguishes between requirements on nonprofits, which do get some of the federal audit requirements passed through to them, as opposed to for-profit businesses. So there isn't a one-size-fits-all answer for your question.
And is that available to us someplace where we could take a look at what these reporting requirements would be at the end of the grant process?
I'm not quite sure how to answer your question. Each of the grants, each of the programs, the agreements that are developed, the agreement would be available for you to look at. Some of them are still being developed, so we don't have them all to give to you now. But once an agreement is done and in existence, they could be provided.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I think there's also there are different requests for data that are coming from us, the Gopher office, because we're trying to aggregate data that is useful for uploading onto the Gopher website for the dashboard so that we can explain to people of New Hampshire as soon as possible how the monies are being put to use, by whom and where in the state of New Hampshire, so that we can show geographic dispersal of the funds. And then at the back end, we need to be able to prove to the federal government in the closeout period that we use the monies in a compliant manner. So as we're writing agreements with various entities that we're distributing funds to, we're looking at it from both of those perspectives, not just simply what do the feds want, but what do we need to see to be able to explain what we've done to the people of New Hampshire. Representative Wallner, do you have another question?
Yes, I just wondered if that information, the Gopher office is going to be asking for, if that will be up on the website or if that would be available to the advisory committee, so that we could see what kinds of information what kind of data we are gathering?
Yes. We will definitely make it available to you, without a doubt. Everything that we're collecting and why we're doing it, to the extent that we can, we're making it available to you. Lisa, you're trying to get my attention.
So just one additional purpose of collecting information, especially right now, as we are continuing to make sure we understand where the need exists, where there are gaps, where there are things that have not yet been anticipated. And so some of this coordination is really important to make sure that we're leveraging these funds in the way that is the most effective as we can do.
Thank you.
Any further questions on this? I don't see any, so I'm going to ask Lisa to jump quickly to New Hampshire Food Bank grant, that Sean? Perfect. Then we'll go to Sean on the food bank grant program, and then there are a couple others that Sean's going to talk to us about. Go ahead, Sean.
Thank you, Director Little. Short and sweet on the food bank. So as I'm sure you probably know, the governor allocated $5 million to the food bank, $2 million immediately, and $3 million will be held in reserve. The current status is we have been working on the agreement. We expect that will be completed soon, and as soon as it is, the grant will be issued shortly thereafter.
And it's a $5 million?
$5 million total, $2 million now, $3 million held in reserve for additional needs.
Perfect.
Down the road.
Thank you. And I think I assumed everybody knew who Sean was. Sean is Sean Thomas. He and Lisa are our policy directors. Sean is also working on the municipal and county payments program.
On the municipal county payments program, this is well underway. We are receiving payment requests. I think the most important thing to mention is there was a recent change to the program. So as originally announced, the program contemplated three request periods with due dates of June 1st, July 15th, and September 15th. Each of those dates corresponded to a specific reimbursement period. For instance, by June 1st, the municipality or county needed to submit reimbursements for expenses incurred from March 1st to April 30th. However, as we approached June 1st, we realized that we had very few requests and getting close to that June 1st date. We also had received a number of questions, making it clear that there was certainly confusion among the towns. That confusion was just general about the program. There was also confusion specifically about FEMA reimbursements. Two things changed with FEMA since the program was originally announced. One is the FEMA program is not moving as fast, I think, as we had hoped. And that's important because this municipal and county program does not reimburse other FEMA-eligible expenses. So to the extent the municipality could request that FEMA, they are not allowed to request it from this program. And so that's caused some confusion because with the program not moving as fast as we had hoped, some of the municipalities and counties were wondering, you know, should I be including this, should I not? And so that was causing confusion. The other piece on FEMA that came down after the program was originally announced is the 25% match. Originally, we could not use these funds for the 25% match. We can now. And so that changed, and so that message needed to be put out there. So those two things and just the general confusion, we thought it made sense to eliminate those reimbursement-specific periods. So now in July 15th, say, which is the next kind of filing period, you could submit a reimbursement request for expenses going back to March. So those periods have now been eliminated. To the extent you did not file a request by June 1st, you could still file a request by July 15th. And you would receive those any expenses incurred even before June 1st. So just a little more leeway there with the program. And just a quick update on some of the stats. As of yesterday, we had received reimbursement requests from 7 counties and 129 municipalities. Some of the municipalities and counties obviously decided to use the new leeway provided with the revisions, and they will, I'm sure, submit reimbursement requests, but at the next deadline of July 15th or even after by September 15th. I hope that made sense. I was squished a lot in there. But
we can find out. Are there any questions for Sean about the municipal and county grant program? Seeing none, I'll ask Sean to move on to the final area of his report, which is the Main Street Relief Program.
On Main Street Relief, as I'm sure you probably know, the first phase of the program, what we were calling the pre-qualification application phase, ended on May 29th. That period, the application period there was from May 15th to May 29th. We received over 13,000 submissions or applications. And so the next phase, or the next and final phase, I should say, will be starting soon. And that phase will also require a separate application or submission. And I did want to clarify, when the program was originally announced, the thought was that this next and final phase would begin on June 1st. It has not started. The reason for that is things are taking a little longer. It makes sense because we want to get it right. I mean, I can assure you that everyone is working very hard on this. It's really all hands on deck. DRA, FAST, which is the DRA RIMS vendor, Gopher, and the governor's office are all working hard on this. Doing it quickly is still a top priority, but I think, we think getting it right is better than rough. So there was a lot of information we received from the pre-qualification phase. We're still working through that information and otherwise developing the program details and the online application. So, again, I expect this will roll out. This next phase will roll out soon. I don't have an exact date for you yet, but it should be soon. And once all those decisions are made, it will be announced and the information will be available in a number of places on the Gopher and DRA and websites for sure. There'll be a program overview, program details. We'll have FAQs. We will update those FAQs as we receive more questions. Also, to the extent you are a business that completed a pre-qualification application, you will receive an email with information on how to proceed to the next phase. So that word will get out. It's just the dates for now have not been set. And I do want to clarify, so as originally announced, this next phase was supposed to start on June 1st and end on June 8th. Now with it not starting on June 1st, that June 8th date will also change. So businesses will not be held to that date. Obviously, that will be pushed back as well.
Questions regarding the Main Street Relief Program, grants to small businesses. And I think that's probably one of the major decisions that has been made so far is they're grants, not loans.
Right.
Representative Walner.
Thank you. Certainly the public has been notified about this program. I was impressed with the amount of outreach to the community, and I've read it several times in my local newspaper with an ad telling people about the program and how to apply. So I really want to commend whoever was in charge of doing the outreach. What I've been wondering is, what will the application be like for the business? How long do you anticipate the application to be, and what kind of time will it take the applicant to apply, and what kinds of backup materials will they need to provide?
The application will be very similar to the and I'm sorry because it gets confusing when we use the same words, but this final submission will be very similar to what the pre-qualification application looked like. And in most respects, it will function like a verification. So we want to make sure the information they entered on their pre-qualification is accurate information. And so this final submission will probably take about the same amount of time it took the business to complete the pre-qualification application. There isn't much additional information that will be needed. It really is primarily a verification, but it is a separate submission. So even though it functions as a verification, they will need to submit this separate submission. I don't know if that answers your question. I'm sorry, but it is going to look and feel a lot like the previous application, except the format will be a little different, but it really is primarily to verify everything that was already entered.
We're not talking pages and pages of data or the need to collect a huge amount of information to be able to complete the return. I can't imagine it would take anybody much more than half an hour, probably less.
Right.
Quite a bit less to file the application.
Right. And if you have all the information that you use to complete your pre-qualification application, you basically have everything you need. And it shouldn't, to Jerry's point, you spent 30 minutes, I would say even closer to 15. It's not a difficult application. Getting it right and making sure we're making sure we're asking all the questions the right way is the difficult piece, and that's what we're working on now.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate hearing that.
Further questions about the Main Street Relief Program? I don't see any, so thank you very much, Sean. Appreciate it. We have two more programs out of the 11 that have been stood up so far to brief you on. I think Nancy, is Nancy taking the lead on these, or are you doing it, Lisa? Lisa English will be taking the lead on the healthcare system relief.
I'm higher education. I'm sorry.
Okay. So I thought it was Nancy. Yeah, Nancy Smith is going to be talking about the healthcare system relief fund.
Part of the challenge with moving forward on the healthcare system relief fund, which, as you know, there was $50 million in state funds initially allocated to that before the CARES Act came into existence, where we got the flex funds. And so part of the challenge with that has been determining how to move forward. Now that we're going to use CARES Act funds to be sure that we're complying with the CARES Act requirement and spending the money for the existing applicants as well as for the additional allocation that the governor made a few weeks ago, adding another $50 million. $30 million of which is designated for long-term care providers. So we have a plan for moving forward, and we're working very hard on operationalizing that. The long-term care providers will have a separate application process for the $30 million that was allocated to them, so that we can be sure that it is all going to that universe of provider. And I think there's some concern about that. We are trying to wrap up a few remaining applications that had been evaluated from the first application and give them an opportunity to receive loans on the same terms as the people that originally got loans from the program, but then the plan is to move forward and move the other remaining funds that are available for healthcare providers into being grants, similar to, and the long-term care will also be grants. So the moving forward, we're going to be going into grants for these providers. We're working on new applications that will contain all the CARES Act information we need for both long-term care and for the healthcare providers. And I can't give you an exact time frame on that. Part of our challenge is that trying to operationalize so many programs like Main Street and MIS at the same time that sometimes, if I said we wanted to have these up and running by Friday, or Main Street is taking a little bit longer, this may get pushed back a few days as well. But we are, we hope to have those new applications and notices and program information out very soon.
Very good. And that's, you also mentioned there, converting things, loans to grants. which is, for very good reason, the major focus of all of the programs. We're trying to put this money out in grants. We don't want to be in the business of making loans and recovering loan funds at the end of the day.
The Treasury guidance, the FFIL questions that I referred to earlier that came out on May 28th did actually hit the loan question head on finally. Treasury has said that if you make loans, it can, if you recover the loan, it can only be used for the same purpose as the original funds. And if you got it back next year, you'd have to return it to the federal government.
Yeah. And one of our general philosophies here has been that the last thing any of the entities we're trying to assist need at this point in time is additional debt that they might have to repay. So we're strongly in the grant-making business.
I guess the final piece on that is that to the extent that some of the providers have taken loans from the initial disbursement, our focus right now is getting the rest of the money allocated and processing the existing applications and new applications, but then our intent is to go back and re-examine those loans that were given to the first batch and approach those and see if we can convert those to grants, certainly before the but we want to get the money spent and then go back and look at the existing loans for conversion of those to grants as well.
Thank you. Any questions for Nancy about the healthcare system relief fund? Or any questions about the healthcare system relief fund generally? Seeing none, we'll move on to the last of the 11 that we have stood up so far, GOPHER-related programs, which are higher education assistance grants, and Lisa English is going to speak to those.
And before I do that, if I may, Director Little, I just wanted to clarify the data on the child care. So I had talked about the number of children being served is 9,693. If every currently open slot was filled, that would be the 11,584 number, which leaves right now, as of June 1st, 1,891 open child care slots. And just for some context, when we talk about 362 being opened and 526 having gone through the pre-qualification process, on March 13th, there were 788 licensed child care facilities. So my apologies for really making some errors in characterizing those numbers, but I wanted to provide that to you. So for the emergency funding for higher education for the University System of New Hampshire and the Community College System of New Hampshire, as you likely know, the University System of New Hampshire is a $10 million proposed budget, and for the Community College System, it's $5 million. And this is funding to be used for coronavirus testing, contact tracing, as well as with USNH to plan for isolation and care of those who may become infected. And this is in part, obviously, as those schools look to reopening, the potential for reopening, and any changes that need to be made for the fall. Part of those funds would also, at USNH, be used to build out its infrastructure to strengthen and expand its ability to consistently deliver remote online learning and degree programs, as well as any modifications that the university would see as necessary to allow for on-campus social distancing. The community college fund is similar. They're back to the lab proposal, which is essentially learning supports that are needed for lab and hands-on courses that have to be delivered in person. And so this is going to be used across the 7 regionally dispersed colleges to pay instructors for extended hours to allow students to access lab spaces in smaller numbers, allowing for social distancing, as well as to, and this is important, obviously, for people that are completing degrees and certificates in the as we close out the spring and head into the summer and fall in technical trades, as well as students who need to complete lab hours to complete licensing requirements. And there's also funding there as well for testing and any necessary modifications for social distancing. Those grant applications we're working on them. They're in draft form and hopefully will be finalized very soon.
Thank you. Any questions about that program? Seeing none, I will just first apologize for taking those out of order for as they have been shown on your agenda, but we had to do that to facilitate the need for some of our staff at another meeting going on downstairs. So I apologize, but hope you've got some value from those updates. I would note that there is one more program that the governor has announced, a 12th program called the Small Business Gap Fund. We don't have any details to present to you on that because we're waiting to find out how the other programs flesh out to identify any gaps that might reveal themselves so that we can use that program, which will be administered by the Business Finance Authority, to close those gaps. So that may be, in fact, an opportunity for dealing with things like summer camps. Are there any questions about the program status reports or any of the programs? If not, we will move on to item four, which is other. And when the agenda was sent out, we had requests to have conversations about the housing and homelessness programs. Senator D'Alessandro asked us to talk about private post-secondary education, and you've added a couple of things during the conversation today. Housing and homelessness, I believe that issue was raised by Representative Walner.
Thank you, Mr. Little. We did have presentations a couple of weeks ago by people from the Housing Action New Hampshire. They talked to us about the challenges around people with housing issues and evictions, rental subsidy, and homeless shelter programs, as well as trying to fill the affordable housing pipeline program. What I'd like to do is talk about some of these and get people's ideas about what Gopher might be able to suggest to the governor around providing some funding for these housing programs. It seems like, especially I was thinking about the homeless shelter programs they were talking about, what they need to do is sort of reconfigure some of the shelters so that they can get the appropriate spacing so that people can be safe in those facilities. But it seems like it's something that probably needs to get started pretty soon. We're in the time when it's probably easiest to work on sort of refitting and making the physical spaces more appropriate in our shelters. And I just wanted to know, I guess I would like to know what other people are thinking about them, how we might move forward with a program around housing.
Senator Morris, you have a question, sir.
Yeah, Jerry, first of all, let me thank you for getting such a quick response because I asked if we could get an update on all the federal funds that are coming in for homelessness in New Hampshire and how it's being used. Is Lisa still on this call? That she can
yes, she is. Lisa, I think Lisa is still here, and I think that was a request from Senator Morris to
You wrote a memo about federal funds already contributed towards housing and homelessness.
Would it be helpful for me to go through that, the points in that email?
Well, I think it would be helpful to go through it, but I think if we've had any contact with these different groups, maybe it can answer some of the questions that our committee has.
Certainly. So, and I think it's fair to say before I go through some of that, given the conversations that took place before the Legislative Advisory Board as well as the Stakeholder Advisory Board, we have been having conversations with Chris Santinello as well as Melissa Hatfield in looking at some of the proposals or suggestions that were presented to the board about how to address specifically, certainly the issue that Representative Wallner just mentioned, the homeless shelters, and what does this look like? Because winter is coming very, very quickly. It seems really far away until you think about how the challenges that we face with regard to sheltering every winter pre-COVID as we head into the end of 2020. And then certainly thinking about issues related to rental assistance or other kinds of assistance that may keep people from becoming homeless or from losing their housing, avoiding eviction. So I certainly don't have a recommendation or a proposal at this time, but those conversations have been ongoing since the presentations were made to the board, both the legislative and stakeholder advisory board. So the other assistance, if you'd like me to go through that exists in New Hampshire through the CARES Act. The CARES Act had allocated $4 billion nationally for homeless assistance grants. And that the New Hampshire received a total of $3,740,000 from that program, with Manchester receiving $540,000 of that total amount. DHHS is using the $3 million to provide essential dollars in the form of staff stipends for 8 weeks for direct staff working with people who are experiencing homelessness. They provide additional dollars directly to shelters to assist them with increased costs that are a result of the pandemic. And then the DHHS is providing additional dollars for permanent supportive housing programs. The other programs I have less details on, but I will just go through them very quickly. The CARES Act allocated an additional $1.25 billion for tenant-based rental assistance. The challenge with that is that funding is specific to cover any increases in costs associated with existing vouchers. So these funds aren't to be used, at least in the initial CARES Act. These funds cannot be used if it's new or additional clients. There is the Community Development Block Grant. That was $5 billion nationally. And that is to provide assistance for economic and housing impacts, including community health facilities, child care centers, food banks, and senior services. New Hampshire should have received or was slated to receive $7.5 million, with $5.4 million of that to be administered through the Community Development Finance Authority, as well as some sent directly to Manchester, Nashua, Portsmouth, Dover, and Rochester. And then finally, the Community Services Block Grant. This is $1 billion nationally allocated to the Community Services Block Grant to help local community-based organizations. I don't have a New Hampshire-specific number for that, nor do I have a sense of how much of that is being used for housing, but I include it in the list just as these are some resources that could be used for housing support.
Questions or further comments?
Well, Lisa, I'm sorry. This is Mary Jane. I guess having heard what you just went through, I don't think I got the email, or I didn't. I haven't seen that information, so that was helpful. Where do you see gaps? I mean, though those are pretty big numbers, it probably doesn't realistically meet the kinds of needs that a lot of our housing needs that we have. So where do you see the first gaps that we might put some funding for housing? Would you think the homeless shelters so that they can get started on some of this work so we don't find ourselves in the middle of December and having an issue with our shelters again?
Thank you for the question, Representative. I think that that is certainly one place that is a gap. I mean, there is the homeless assistance grants are helpful, but it certainly isn't at an amount that would allow for some of the changes that need to be done in advance of a winter situation, especially to the extent there's a fall outbreak. And again, I do spend time speaking with homeless, with people that are experts in the area of housing, and I am not one, but it is another area that is certainly very important to the whole staff here at Gopher. So I'm certain that Chris Danello and other folks at DHHS would be able to provide additional detail to the extent there are questions. But I think absolutely funding to help get shelters ready for the winter is an important place. And then there's the challenge of identifying where the gaps exist with regard to rental assistance. One of the challenges there is certainly with the additional unemployment benefits, to the extent that those are not continued, there may be individuals who are able to meet their rent obligations right now, and they could find themselves in a very different position come September. And of course, we're always mindful of our December 30th, 2020 deadline to expend these funds. So it certainly is a challenging area, and we continue to try to understand where the gaps are. Another gap I have heard a lot about, it's not a gap, but you have people where they have family members coming home who may have been away at school, or they may be a parent who moved in with their adult children, and people who were getting food elsewhere, grocery bills and utility bills and things like that have continued to increase. So I think there's a lot to the question, and I think it's a very good one and a very important one. Sheltering is certainly one place, and then understanding where there is a need for any assistance to maintain housing to avoid the issue of someone becoming homeless.
Thank you, Lisa. Senator D'Alessandro, you have a question, sir.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate those comments, Lisa. I've got a couple of questions. One, housing stock is at a premium, so it's very difficult to find housing, in both particularly in the urban areas like Manchester. So I want to talk about two things. A, if you're in and you get beyond the fact where you don't have to pay your rent, you got a problem there with eviction. That's something that we have to deal with. Secondly, the homeless problem in Manchester has accelerated. People are living in encampments along the Merrimack River, and the encampment under the Embuscade Bridge is growing rapidly. And as you say, time is flying, and the bad weather is going to come, and those people can't sustain in that environment for a variety of reasons. So the question of are there shelters that are going to become available, and will these people be able to access those shelters? And that's a difficult task, getting them out. I understand that. But the availability of a place to go and the question of sustainability once they're there. Now, we hope that the job situation is going to open up and that people will have the opportunity to go back to work. But there isn't any housing stock. People who are problematic with their jobs are going to lose the fact that the moratorium on the payment of their rent is going to disappear, and the homeless environment is growing dramatically, and that creates a series of other problems. So those are key elements that that I think we have to talk about in terms of how what solutions are going to be out there. And I realize that a long-term solutions are going to fall on the backs of the local municipalities and the state for the long run. But for the immediate situation, the monies that we have set aside to deal with this, I think, have to be used properly, expeditiously, to solve those problems that are right in front of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I think those are just incredibly important points, and that certainly the issue with the lack of affordable housing, that is one that is very important to the housing question, and it's one that we're not able to address because of the parameters on the CARES Act, meaning when it needs to be spent, and it's different than stimulus funding, which might have different guardrails to it. I do know that there's a devoted crew at the department focused on rapid rehousing, making sure that people aren't evicted, and we will continue to look at these issues as we go forward and take whatever action we're able to.
Thank you, Lisa. Representative Walner, is there anything else you'd like us to discuss on this topic?
Well, I think we've had a good discussion, and I guess what I'd really like to know is whether or not, you know, I don't know how really to suggest that we go forward, but maybe Senator Moore has some ideas. You know, should a few people get together and try to come up with how we might make a proposal for a, you know, a first round of grants for the housing, around the housing issue, and leave it then as something that, as we move forward with the department, can certainly give us a lot of information about where the gaps are and the kinds of things we need to do. But it seems like we need to get started on this because, like Lee said, it'll be winter before we know it, and we need to get the, I think particularly the shelters need to get appropriately retrofitted to work, or we're going to have a really limited number of spaces in them.
Thank you. Senator Morris.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to break it down because of what I see the challenges of the next 3 weeks in the legislature, but I think we could obviously put something together in July and start working on this. My concern was, and that's why I called Jerry yesterday and asked to give me an update, because I thought I had read somewhere in a document, and it was Senator Shaheen's document, I believe, that money was coming in outside of Gopher. So that's why Lisa, I received that today, and I only asked yesterday, so it was pretty quick. But you know, what's coming in and what we're doing with it and everything, I thought was important to go over. I have no problem getting us involved with you know, the issue and seeing what the gaps are. I just maybe this is one for the reps, because I have a feeling the Senate right now is going to have the handful for a couple of days. Why don't we work on that? Mary Jane, I'll call you and figure out how to get a group together to work on that.
Great. Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Two things. One, would it be okay, Senator, if Lisa shared with the rest of the committee the email that she sent to you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I brought it up. I wasn't sure that hadn't already happened. So I meant to ask that question, but absolutely.
And secondly, I think you're aware of some other efforts going on already, Lisa?
Yes. So DHHS is working on this issue, so I wonder if it would be helpful as they finalize a recommendation, which is based on the information provided to the board, if we provide that to you, it may well be in line with what concerns you're trying to address.
I think that would be very helpful. Thank you.
I think we could, you know, I'll talk with Mary Jane, and then I'll certainly call the Gopher office and work out how we do this. So I don't want to do things twice, but Mary Jane's not the only one that has called me about this concern. So we'll work with you. And thank you for getting that so fast.
Thank you.
And thank you for putting it on the agenda.
I'm sorry, Representative Wallner, I was speaking at the same time. I missed your comment.
I just said thank you so much for putting it on the agenda today.
Absolutely. Also on the agenda, Senator D'Alessandro, you asked us to talk about private post-secondary education.
Yes. Thank you, Jerry. And first of all, thanks for putting it on the agenda. I think this has been one of our most productive meetings, so kudos to you and the staff, because the information that flowed today is essential in the decision-making process, obviously. We talked about private post-secondary education at our last time we met, and we talked about a $5 million appropriation. In light of the fact that they are an economic driver for the state of New Hampshire, in many communities, they're the largest taxpayer in the community, they're the largest provider of jobs in the community, and they provide significant economic development for the state, and certainly the academic area. They provide quality education, and they need help. Remember that most of them were forced to close down. They were forced to refund room and board money that went into the millions of dollars but at the private level, but certainly at the public level also. And they, in order to prepare for their reopening in September, based on the COVID situation, they're going to have to make many accommodations. And those accommodations come at a cost, and I think that we should be helpful to them. I mean, they're an integral part of New Hampshire and an integral part of the economic ability of the state of New Hampshire. They have a mechanism, the New Hampshire College and University Council, that can work with all of the privates in determining a methodology for how this money would be distributed to each one of the entities. And as I said, they're in dire need. No one has ever faced anything like this. And in the field of education, when you had to send people home, replace their on-campus academic environment with a virtual environment, there's a costly item there, and all of these costs were incurred and carried by the institutions. So I'm thinking of the privates, you got New England College, you got Colby Sawyer College, you got St. Anselm's College, you got Franklin Pierce University. All of these are valuable entities within the communities that they reside in, and with the greater New Hampshire and greater New England community, and really the greater eastern portion of the United States that they serve, as well as taking foreign students. So I believe, I spent most of my life in post-secondary education, as most of you know, and I just think it's essential that we support them and recognize the fact that this virus caused tremendous disruption in that area, and enormous costs were placed on the entities at no fault of their own. It just happened. And that's my pitch. I know when we talked about this in the group, I thought we had a unanimous support for the $5 million that was talked about. At one time, I talked about $10 million, but we reduced it to $5 million. I looked at my notes from an initial discussion we had, and we did talk about the $10 million. But anyway, that's my narrative on the subject, and I'm happy to answer worries that people have. And I know you, Jerry, and your group must have spent some time looking this over and looking at the economic positive effect private post-secondary education has on the state of New Hampshire. That's my pitch.
Thank you, Senator. Any comments or questions for Senator D'Alessandro or us? I see a question from Senator Susie.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. I do want to just echo the comments of Senator D'Alessandro and just add two things. One, I think the timing for many of our universities is very critical. They've had to extend the time frame by which students make decisions about what they're going to come here. But the other thing that I would add is that a great number of employees, a large sector of our workforce, is as a result of these students coming to our colleges and universities, and they're in the process of making those decisions. If they don't come, that will further, I think, our workforce challenges here in this state. So I do believe it's something we need to move forward with, and we need to do so quickly. I really think it's there. But I also have one other question for you, Commissioner, for whomever on the Gopher staff could answer. And it was regarding the governor's emergency order number 48, but particularly the in-person special education requirements that imposed. It was unclear to me in the order, and I don't know if there's been any further discussion, whether CARES funding would be used to help the communities that are being asked to meet those requirements, providing those in-person services.
I'm sorry, Senator. I am not familiar with all the emergency orders, so I'm trying to pull up emergency order 48.
So it dealt with our school districts and the provision of special education services, and did have some requirements for in-person visitation. I've heard from several schools that posed a particular challenge and will continue to do so, and that there were some added costs in doing that, and was just questioning if there are any resources that will be flowing from the CARES funds to our institutions to help them with that process.
I'm reviewing that executive order now, so I see it. And your question is whether or not CARES Act money will be available to school districts
that are incurring costs by having in-person services. Yes.
Right. I don't know the answer to the question. We'll push it forward. Generally, what happens is we get recommendations. They've come primarily from this group, the Legislative Advisory Board or the Stakeholders Advisory Board. There have been a couple that have just been authored by the Gopher team and sent over there. I think the way to handle this is to simply ask the question as you've placed it. So that's what we'll do. Lisa, you mean it, but you've got a question to ask or a comment.
Just to the extent, I mean, I know that we've talked a little bit about some of the education funding that is out there, but to the extent there is some CARES Act education funding, and providing some of these supports is certainly an allowable expense for that CARES Act funding, and that is at the discretion of the LEA, the local education agency, because the school district, essentially. And I believe there's some additional funding that I am less familiar with that involves some additional grants that can be sought, but I don't have my hands on that information. But so there is non-coronavirus relief funding available as well.
Thank you. Senator Morse, you have your hand up.
Well, I knew we were coming back in June to make some more recommendations. I think the funding going out is a little slower than I think all of us anticipated, but I think that's because you're doing an awful lot of work in the to make sure that it goes to the right people, which I applaud you for that. But I'm wondering if out of today's meeting we just make the one recommendation that Senator D'Alessandro has talked about, and maybe we can follow up with a letter that we don't have today, but we can just make the recommendation and we can work with the Speaker and the Senate President to have a letter follow with that.
So that's a that's a request, or that we reiterate the suggestion from the Legislative Advisory Board to the Governor to direct $5 million in funding to private.
Did we put the $5 million in the original one, Jerry? Because I thought the private we held back on the original one.
I don't have your spreadsheet in front of me right now, but I thought that's what I heard
we did.
On the call today from Senator D'Alessandro, that we had made a recommendation for $5 million.
And then we took it back.
Oh, we did take it
back?
Right.
Okay. Well, you can always...
Yeah, I think it would be appropriate if Lou just made a motion, and then if there's an issue here, we'll take care of it. But we can always, you know, if we're double counting here, we can come back and take care of it at our next meeting. But... we said we were coming back on June 3rd to take care of a few of these things. I don't think it would be appropriate to review any of the other categories. We've got a lot of information today, which is great. But I think, you know, going forward with this would be appropriate. So if Lou wants to do that.
Yep, I'd like to make that motion that we recommend that $5 million be sent to the private post-secondary education institutions, and that they come up with the distribution formula and present that.
Second, Hennessy.
So we have a motion and a second to suggest to the Governor that he identify $5 million in the CARES Act flex funds for distribution to the private colleges and universities. And I believe, did I hear somebody say that we would rely on the schools to figure out how to distribute it?
Well, rely on the New Hampshire College and University Council, which is the organization that represents both the publics and the privates, to come up with a distribution formula and present that, yes.
Okay, very good. So I understand the motion and the second. Is there further conversation, discussion? Seeing none, we under RSA 91A, because this is a public meeting being held by conference call, we will have to take a roll call for this vote. Are you ready for the roll call? Senate President Donna Soucy?
I vote yes.
House Speaker Steve Shurtleff?
I vote yes.
Senate Republican Leader Chuck Morse?
Yes.
House Republican Leader Dick Hinch?
Dick Hinch, yes.
Chairman Lou D'Alessandro?
Yes.
Chairwoman Mary Jane Walner?
Yes.
Senator John Reagan? Senator Reagan?
Yes.
Representative Aaron Hennessy?
Hennessy, yes.
That is a unanimous vote. We will write it up and send it over to the Governor's office.
Jerry, can I make another comment about Senator Soucy talked about the special ed, and I think one of the members did some special work for Senator Morse, monies outside of the CARE Act that went to the different entities. $38 million went directly to the Department of Education for distribution. Now, there was some thought that distribution would take place along the Title I lines. That would indeed help to satisfy some of the needs manifested by Senator Soucy in her comments. I wonder if there's a possibility that that could be looked into by your office, as it addresses a question that was posed here, and may there may be an answer to that in those other funds.
Very good. We can take a look into that. I think that would require a call of the Department of Education.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Very good. So getting back to our agenda, if I can figure out what I did with it. There we go. Representative, I think it was Representative Waller, asked that we add state hospital workers' stipends to the end of our agenda for today. Sort of a new item, not on the agenda. Representative Waller?
Yes, I've actually had a number of persons who work at the state hospital reach out to me concerning the stipend program. And it seems to me that the work they're doing at New Hampshire State Hospital is some of the most difficult work of any of our state workers. It's certainly, I think, as difficult as people who are working in the prisons, people who are working at Sununu Youth Center, people who are working maybe at Glencliff Nursing Home. They're working with some of our most seriously ill citizens. And I know that sometimes in these situations it can be very physical. Patients are often difficult to manage. I think it's very stressful work, and when you add something like the virus that we have at this point that could possibly come into New Hampshire Hospital, I feel like these workers are definitely on the front line. And I would like to see us consider them also for the stipend. It sounded like some of the stipend programs were not drawing down maybe as rapidly as we thought they might. And I think these are workers that also need to be considered for a stipend. So I will actually make a motion that we include workers at New Hampshire State Hospital in the stipend program. And I know there are social workers, there are mental health workers, and nurses there.
So you have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion. This is Senator Donna Susie.
Thank you, Senator. And Speaker Shurtleff, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I did. Just to second the motion.
Very good.
That's fine. Thank
you. Any further conversation? Senator Morse.
Yeah, I certainly have worked a lot with the DRF program and everything to make sure that we actually improved our beds and everything, and I support these people, but this is the problem with putting stipends in. It's going to become, you know, who's not important. I mean, you know, I look at what every business is doing, and they're certainly doing the same thing because their employees are coming to work. I really don't know the answer, to be honest with you. Making the recommendation is, I guess the point of the recommendation is they're important to us, you know, in the whole community of healthcare in New Hampshire. I get that. I mean, and I support that part of the motion. I just would like to make it clear I have concerns about these stipends all the way through all of these things, because who isn't important. I mean, and that's the question you get when you're out now is, so if these people are more important than my job, and I guess I'm not trying to send that message, but I wouldn't want to send a message to the employee at New Hampshire Hospital that I don't support them. So it's kind of a catch-22, to be honest with you. But if it's what the committee wants to do today, I mean, I'll support it. But I think we're basically the whole group of people out there that we're probably not acknowledging, and I don't think there's enough money in the world to tell people they're doing, you know, the right work for the right time. And I just get concerned about that, to be honest with you.
Thank you, Senator Morse. Any other conversation?
I think Senator Morse's point is well taken. You appreciate the work that everyone's doing, and the question is, how far do you go with this? And I think I'm certainly going to support the motion, but the question that we're going to have to address one of these days is how far does it go, and who gets left out, and who, as a result of being left out, gets a negative opinion of themselves. That's not a very good situation as part and process of this the service element connected with their job.
Thank you, Senator D'Alessandro. Representative Hinch, you have a question, sir, or a comment?
Yes, thank you. I have the same feeling that Senator Morse and Senator D'Alessandro just echoed, and I think it might be a prudent exercise for us to at least find out how many people this covers and what the expense for this is going to be, because as Senator Morse said very well, who isn't important, and this could get out of control, especially if we don't know the metrics that are involved with this.
Thank you, Representative Hinch. Further comments? So if I could restate the motion just to make sure I know what you are voting on. The motion from Senator Wallner and seconded by Senator Susie and Speaker Shurtleff is to recommend that COVID-19 stipends be extended to employees at New Hampshire Hospital. I'm wondering if there's clarification, Representative Wallner, to identify which employees at New Hampshire Hospital. My understanding is that in the other facilities, they've been client-facing employees and not administration or other non-client-facing staff. You have any thoughts?
Yes, I would. Yes, clients. Yes, people who deal directly with the patient.
Thank you. Senator Morse?
Yeah, I've got down here Hampstead Hospital, which we moved the children to in order to create 48 new beds over there. That was one of our goals. You move 24 children, you double the capacity. At New Hampshire Hospital, I would prefer, even if it means we have to come back, next week and vote on this, that we get a clarification. I support the issue, but I'm not sure I understand the difference between, something that I was part of to make sure that we move the children down here so we create more space. Are the people at Hampstead Hospital included in there? This is the problem with the stipends, but I guess we should have a definite you know, where we're ending this and where we're starting it and where we're ending it, part of this motion, because otherwise it probably won't happen anyway. So I prefer we even if we just come back for this issue, that we put this on an agenda for next week and just come back and vote on it. I think it'd make more sense with more detail. I mean, I could get that out there. So.
I certainly agree. Would agree to that.
So is are you asking us to? Are you going to withdraw the motion, Representative Walner, or and revisit this next week? Is that the suggestion?
Yes, I will withdraw the motion and have us come back for a look at this next week. I don't know which day you want to come back, but at that point we can have more information.
Yeah, if the committee will allow it, I think I have to talk to the Senate President about that because our calendars are starting to hook up. So why don't we work together and figure out a date next week that works? I mean, I don't think it's going to be a long meeting, but I do think we need to do some homework. So if you're withdrawing the motion, I appreciate it for now. I'll work to set up a day next week that works for all of us. So.
Great. I think that makes a lot of sense. Thank you, Mary Jane, for that. And thank you for withdrawing the second. So that makes a great deal of sense. And we'll meet on a date to be determined. Is that correct?
Yeah, I just think we've got to be careful because we're setting up all these committees. And I have to speak with Donna about that.
Great.
Thank you. Yes, we will discuss that because we do have a number of hearings that have already begun to be scheduled for next week. So we'll make something work.
Great. Yeah.
Very good.
And direct a little. I want to reiterate what I said in terms of the meeting. I got more information out of this meeting, particularly about the amount of money that's passing out the doors. Oh. The accountability for that, and I certainly appreciate that. I really appreciate the numbers that were given to us on the child care, and the fact that we know how many seats are open, we know how many seats are occupied, and the conversation about the camps I think is essential, and I hope that we'll be able to discuss that at our next go around because I think that has a significant economic impact. On New Hampshire, and as I said, the mental health of these kids, because I think that's really significant. These kids have been cooped up, and when you get children, and I'm talking about K through 8 of 9, they need it, and these camps provide an essential activity for them, and it's a good life experience, it's a good socialization experience. So the other thing that I think was clarified is the FEMA situation and the fact that the money can be used for the match. That's very important, as 25% payment is very significant in this business, particularly when you're building up some pretty large numbers. So thank you very much for all of the information that was given to us. And I hope that you'll keep sending that information out to us. And I think the last thing is, the information provided on the non-CARE Act monies that are flowing into the state and how they affect some of the decisions that we're making in terms of money flowing into those areas that provide additional support. It's good for us to know that. I think it's very helpful in terms of the whole experience of dealing with this. So thank you and your staff very much for that, and thank my colleagues for their good work.
And thank you, Senator D'Alessandro. So the motion has been withdrawn pending further conversation at a meeting to be held next week. Senator Morris, I will wait to hear from you as to what the date of that next meeting is going to be. And once we have the date, I will send out a meeting notice and an agenda, which will probably be fairly short unless I hear from folks. Otherwise, we will revisit the issue of stipends for New Hampshire hospital workers. The staff here will work to get some details for you about that. And I believe Senator D'Alessandro wants us to talk a little bit more about the summer camps at the next meeting.
Yes.
Is there anything else for the good of the order?
Commissioner Little, could I just add, if it's possible to get that information about Executive Order 48 and if any CARES funding will be provided for in-person special
yes,
ed services, helpful as well. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Senator Susie. And is there anything else? Seeing no hands raised on the board or hearing otherwise, we will then adjourn this meeting of the Legislative Advisory Board at, what does that say, 2:50.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Have a great weekend.